streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ING. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical. Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, November the 11th, 2024. Tim Wildman here with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Chris, Chris isn't here today. Fred Jackson's here.
How you doing? Filling in for Chris.
Well, good to have you, Fred.
Good to be here.
Today is Veterans Day. Ed, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, and yesterday was the birthday for the U.S. Marine Corps, but today is Veterans Day. It was originally commemoration of the end of World War One, and because this was Armistice Day. This was the day the armistice was signed, ending World War One. But over the years since then, it has become a day in which our country recognizes the lives spent in the preservation of liberty wars.
Now, what's the difference between Veterans Day and Memorial Day?
Well, Memorial Day is actually the day when we recognize those who have given their lives in war. Veterans Day is partly that, because its origins were also to remember those who died in World War One. But Veterans Day, also more broadly speaking, is also a day when people thank those who served in the military and who are still alive. Fred served in the military, Canada.
And he's still alive.
And he is still alive. So 2 days in which we remember and honor those who have served our country in the military.
Amen. Well, and we do honor those. We have many veterans who are listening.
Yes.
Right now, listen to American Family Radio, and we just thank them from the bottom of our hearts and their families, because a lot of times families sacrifice, because their loved ones who are serving, you know, are stationed around the world.
That's right.
So, Fred, what's the Veterans Day in Canada?
They call it Remembrance Day.
Oh, it's the same day?
Same day, okay. Yes. So there will be ceremonies at cenotaphs throughout the country, very similar to what we're watching at this very moment at Arlington, where President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris have gathered for a ceremony there today. And, it's interesting. At our church yesterday, as you were mentioning, Ed, we recognize those who had served the military. But, Tim, you make a very interesting point. I have a son-in-law who was in the military for 11 years, and those who stay at home, their spouses,
right,
also are owed a special debt of gratitude because they have to be there basically to carry on the domestic life while the husband, while the wife is away serving. And especially many times, I think Navy personnel, because a Navy ship will go to sea for months.
Right.
Many months at a time. And so they're away from their families for very long periods of time. So we honor them today, those who have passed on, but also those who perhaps are retired from the military and those who are on active duty right now.
And we're watching the we have four video streams in our studio.
We need more, actually. Four is just not enough, isn't it?
From major news outlets, we have CNN, Fox, BBC, and MSNBC, all four of them right now showing President Biden laying a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery, again, in remembrance of those who have given their lives. But we have a number. Listen, we have a number of people here at AFA.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned you, Fred. A number of those who have served in the military. I have members of my family. I've never served in the military, but my dad did. I have a couple of nephews who have, and so the military is ingrained in our culture as an institution worthy of respect because of the fact that they literally put their lives on the line to protect and ensure that we remain free.
And you know what's about to happen too, which I'm thankful for?
What's that?
With President Trump's election and the Senate changing over to 53-47 in favor of Republicans, this woke garbage is going to stop.
In the military.
In the military.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This woke poisons, what I call it, is going to stop in the United States military. With the return of President Trump and his administration.
Absolutely. And I think, and I had a discussion with somebody the last few days, I think you're going to see recruitment bounce back in the military, because we've discussed many times here what has happened with recruitment over the last 4 years. And the Biden administration's answer to recruitment problems was to lower the level of expectation of recruitment.
Right.
They also, this another indication of how bad it has been under the Biden administration, they lowered the physical standards that are supposed to be in place for a person coming into the military. And basically they had a pre-boot camp to try to bring people up to a standard that would allow them to pass boot camp.
Yeah.
It was pretty pathetic.
Now that's not all because of the woke virus or poison.
That's what Elon Musk calls it, a woke mind virus.
Woke mind virus. Some of that is just because generationally, young people are not as fit as prior generations. Just because they're not outside as much, they're playing more video games. But that's a real thing where they are having to lower the standards to try to meet their recruitment goals, and they have fallen short. I think all major branches of the military have fallen short. I certainly hope that, Tim, as you mentioned, once this poison is extracted from the military, and that's going to entail having to fire some of those
and change
authority.
Change
in policies. I think you will see for centuries, there have been families that have been members of the family who were a part of the military generation after generation after generation. And a lot of those people started to say, I don't think I'm going to join because of what was happening inside the military.
Couldn't blame them.
I don't blame them either.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if they see a significant change, maybe they'll begin to go back. So
let me ask you this related to that issue. The Democrat Party on last Tuesday, obviously election day, suffered a major losses in the Senate. Obviously the White House. I don't know how the House of Representatives ended up. Was it a wash, basically?
Not yet.
Yeah, I think they're still counting on some. Are they still counting?
Yeah, I think the just before coming in the studio, what I was reading, the Republicans now have, 212, and they need 218. So that's where, and I think the Democrats have 209 elected.
So we don't know who's going to control the House yet, is what you're saying.
That's correct. It's not quite over yet. Republicans are saying we're optimistic, but it's not quite over
yet. Okay, well, just an aside back to my comment about the woke garbage is going to stop in the United States military. I don't think that has anything to do with who controls the House or Senate necessarily, although the Senate has to confirm somebody like a Secretary of Defense. But there's a lot of things that President Trump and his administration can do without congressional authority, without congressional approval, I should say.
Yeah.
And that's what Biden did. Biden did. He used the executive branch and the powers that they do have over the administrative branch of the government to impose their radical left agenda. And so Trump will have to reverse that. And he will.
Yeah, the Secretary of Defense institutes the policies inside. You know, the right. President is Commander in Chief,
right?
And so, yes, Congress may have to provide the money,
right,
for the military. But in terms of policy, in terms of what you do with transgender people and transgender surgery and the DEI garbage that was going on inside right. the military and the driving out of conservatives
right.
from the military, making them feel unwanted, all that can be reversed with the right pick for Secretary of Defense.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Fred, President Trump is, he's announced one big position, right?
Yes, already late last night, after most of us had gone to bed, President-elect Trump announced that Tom Homan, the former director of immigration enforcement, will serve as his border czar, as Alejandro
Mayorkas. Replacing Kamala Harris.
As border czar.
Right.
Actually replacing officially Alejandro Mayorkas. We all remember telling us under oath that the border was secure. Tom Homan, if you watch Fox, he has been on over the last 3.5-4 years a sharp critic of what the Biden administration has done or has not been doing on our southern border. He was interviewed this morning, Tom Homan, on Fox and Friends, and he says deportation will start almost immediately. Cut number two.
As the president said on stage many times, which I agree with 100%, it's going to be the same it was during the first administration, which is just a lot more of them because 10 million people have entered this country illegally under the Biden administration, or they actually let into this country, even though it's a violation of federal law, what they've been doing, the abuse of the parole authority. But look, I've been clear, President Trump's been clear. Public safety threats and national security threats will be the priority because they have to be. They pose the most danger to this country.
So what will Tom Homan's position be?
He is head of Homeland Security.
Not now.
No, will be.
No, will be.
Will be. So he's taking, you talk about a 180 degree turn. Mm-hmm. Mayorkas, he just was terrible.
Disaster.
Yeah. He's the one who oversaw letting everybody come into the country illegally by the millions. And he didn't, mm-hmm. and he kept saying, hey, all's fine. It's kind of like with Biden's mental acuity. All's fine. Mayorkas was all's fine. But sir, we're letting millions of people here illegally. Well, we're giving them cell phones. We're making sure they're housed and taken care of. All's fine. But remember he was asked multiple times in committee hearings about security, mm-hmm. about the terrorists that have come over the border. Every time he would respond, it would basically be all is well.
Yep.
And so this gentleman. Who,
he's selected as border czar, right?
Yeah, well.
That's not the same.
I don't think that's the official title. Okay. It's a title that has been.
He'll be head of national Homeland Security?
Yes.
Okay.
They're giving him the title. A border czar is kind of a media title.
Okay.
That came about. No, it's not the official title.
But that's a cabinet position.
Yes, sir.
Director of Homeland Security, right?
That is correct.
And that has been since Bush, I think that was a newly created position post 9/11, if I remember correctly.
I think that's right. Mm-hmm.
So that's good news for those who are in favor of controlling our border.
In the interview this morning with Tom Homan, he was asked, okay, what are you going to do with the states and or cities that have declared themselves sanctuary cities? In other words, they are told by the governor of a particular state or the mayor of a city, hey, we are not going to cooperate with federal border control people. In other words, yes, we have illegals living in our state, in our town, in our city, but we're not going to help you capture them. So Tom Homan was asked, well, how are you going to deal with that? Cut number three.
But, you know, there's two things. Number one, under President Trump, he was suing the sanctuary cities, DOJ suing the sanctuary cities, pulling federal funds. Of course, day one, when Joe Biden came in office, he stopped that lawsuit. So that has to be put back in place. And look, I've seen these, some of these Democratic governors say they're going to stand in the way. They're going to make it hard for us. Well, a suggestion. If you're not going to help us, get out of the way, but we're going to do it. So if we can't get assistance from New York City, and I may have, you know, we may have to double the number of agents we send to New York City, because we're going to do the job. We're going to do the job without you or with you.
Yeah.
Personally, I wouldn't clean up New York City to help them out. They wanted this mess. Huh?
Yeah. I agree, and let them suffer the consequences of their own misguided policies. The only problem is that people who are here illegally in New York City don't have to stay there. They can cross the state line and go somewhere else, although I doubt that they're going to want to do that. This is going to be challenging, because I don't think the American people, we've said this before, I don't think the American people want to see families being rounded up
by
men in uniform in order to deport. There's got to be some maybe clever ways to get people to self-deport. If you give them a deadline and say, look, in 90 days, this is what's going to happen. We will help. I made this proposal months ago.
Actually,
Ed did.
Okay. Proposal did Ed have?
I say if you came here illegally, you've got 90 days, we will pay you $2,000 a head to go back to the country you're from.
Like cattle.
Well,
$2,000 a head.
You basically say, because $2,000 and you got a family of five or family of six and you're going to go back to Ecuador, that's pretty good money.
You tell them
after 90 days, you don't get money. You're just going to be deported. And you also punish companies that hire illegal immigrants and make it disincentivize that.
Congressman Jim Banks said exactly that in an interview during the weekend of Indiana. He said, what we're going to do, if we have to, we're going to go after employers.
Right.
Because a lot of employers hire these illegals, pay them cash underneath the table. So the vice is going to be put on the employers. If you know that you have illegals in your workforce, we're going to punish you unless you expose them, and these people will be sent home. Cut number four.
Do you see all undocumented immigrants as sort of, should they all be kicked out of the country?
Some conservative estimates say that there are at least 15 million illegals who have come into the country on Joe Biden's watch. It's my hope that we deport every single one of them that we can. And it starts with deporting violent criminals who are in the United States, who came here illegally, who have committed violent crimes. And I think once you do that, President Trump is committed to making that his first and top priority when it comes to mass deportation. And then also on top of that, increase the penalties on businesses who hire illegals in our country and take away the incentive for them to be here and for them to come here. And I think many of them will leave on their own. But this the mass deportation plan needs to be an immediate focus of the House and the Senate.
And then you also have to secure the border.
Yes.
That's whether it's the wall plus drones plus additional boots on the ground. You've got to secure that border.
You're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of the show on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred. Tony Perkins will be with us at the bottom of the hour, president of the Family Research Council. All right, about that, and I'm just speaking as a layman here. I have no masterful knowledge inside or whatever. I'm just going to say about the illegal immigration problem. That Biden and Harris oversaw. We've been talked about this ad nauseum. This is one of the reasons that Harris lost, is because the Biden and Harris just said to the world, y'all come. And they did. And we saw what it did to New York City, to Chicago, to Boston, to Denver, to I mean, all over the country, especially in these major cities, they were having to absorb millions of people and didn't know what to do with them. Remember that?
Yeah.
That problem. So I would say the E-Verify I thought that was already in place, but that's where employers have to have verification that the people they hire are, in fact, U.S. citizens. So maybe, I don't know, remember this?
Yeah,
This has been around for 10, 20 years.
It's a great idea. It's a great system.
So that's one way. Okay, I'm thinking about ways that you can deal with this problem, kind of like what you were talking about, Ed, minus, quote, mass deportation, where you see ICE agents going into homes, and that's not going to happen.
Oh, mom's crying.
No, that's not going to happen.
Bad optics.
That's just not going to happen because there's bad optics and the people just won't.
Hearts will override minds.
Yeah.
If they see that.
Plus, I just think it's too much work to try to do something like this. So the focus, I'm kind of torn on the violent criminals deporting them. Because if they've committed violent acts in the United States, they should be punished in the United States. You send a violent criminal back to Ecuador or Honduras or Venezuela. What punishment is that? I mean, they're not going to. What if they don't agree to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To hold these people, incarcerate them,
and they could come back. You're saying?
Yeah. So what's that's doing them a favor? A violent criminal shipping them back home, deporting them seems to me, unless. Does that make sense?
Well, that's why you have to have a secure border. I think one of the concerns about housing them in U.S. prisons is a lot of these are gang members, and you don't want gangs forming inside the prisons. Anyway, I'm sure that someone like Tom Homan is going to have a lot of these kinds of things figured out.
I'm just trying to be a realist here. You're not going to do anything about the 10, 15 million people who've come in the last 4 years. On any kind of a impactful scale, and I think most Americans realize that they're here, and they're here, and that's now they shouldn't be allowed to become U.S. citizens, where they can vote. That's the one thing. You know what I'm saying? But let me just say this: excuse my ignorance, but we used to have what we call. I remember reading about the days back in the early part of the 20th century, all the way up to the maybe 60s, where we had harvest season, and you would especially, let's say, cotton, for example, you would have, like now cotton is being harvested across a lot of the Midwest and especially the southern states. I know we do a lot of that here in Mississippi. And so back in the early part of the 20th century, we would have people come up from Mexico, for example, and they would be here for a season to do the harvesting of the cotton picking, which is very hard work, I'm told. I'm glad I was born after that.
Right.
Because my parents would tell me about how that worked. They did. Yep. They pick cotton in the field. As a lot of our listeners did, or their parents did. So, but they would have Mexicans come up here and they would stay here, do the work for the season, and then they'd go home. I don't even know if they had temporary work visas it was just part of you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what I'm asking is, could you not have, and maybe we already do, and I'm just ignorant of it. Could we not have temporary work visas for people who we need to come here to do jobs, but we don't want to make them U.S. citizens or have them stay forever?
Well, yeah, but you have to have laws, and you have to have people coming into the country who are following the laws. See, part of the problem is,
but the E-Verify could help.
Yes, E-Verify could help. But if we don't start sending these people home, then we have to ask the question, do they have a right to welfare if they don't have a job? Do they have a right to health care? Do they have a right to send their kids to school? If they're not going to go home, we have to make decisions on all that. Do they have a right to what taxpayers pay into the system to get in return.
I think they have a right. I wouldn't say they have a right, but they're going to get it. I know we have a lot of hospitals don't ask about people's documentation.
Well, what I'm saying is the anger over them having access to it is part of what drove the vote, I think, last Tuesday.
Yeah, but I think Americans are pretty tender-hearted on helping people, even if they're undocumented. We'll be back momentarily.
Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation? Much like abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescues, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and we thank you for listening. We were talking about the announcement by President Trump's team, or him, I don't know who did this, that Tom Homan, that gentleman's name?
Yes.
Will be the
new border czar.
But what's his proper title?
Homeland Security.
Director of Homeland Security, a cabinet position.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't see that. Did you see that, Ed?
I have.
You did see that, Fred? I'm not talking about a border czar separate from, you're saying he will be, he's a former ICE director.
Yes.
Yes.
Acting ICE director.
So he will be the new Homeland Security.
Yes. We have a story on our site, AFN.net, okay. AFN.net. Also, Elsie Stefanik, congresswoman from New York.
Yeah.
She has been announced as Trump's pick to be the United States ambassador to the United Nations. And she got on a lot of people's radar. Remember when we had all these anti-Israel protests mm-hmm. on campuses, and then the Harvard president was invited in, and she was the one that really ran hard with them at these hearings.
Right.
Ended up in Harvard's president stepping down. I think it was the University of Pennsylvania. The president there also stepped down. There was two or three.
This was right after the October attack.
Yes.
It was several weeks, but then you started having all these protests.
Yes.
Clearly organized.
Yes.
By pro-Hamas factions.
And I think it was the Harvard professor who couldn't answer the question, what are you going to do about this? Well, you know, they have free speech rights.
Right.
To attack Jewish citizens.
All right. Well, joining us now is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch, heard each afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time on the American Family Radio Network and other stations around the country. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing good. Are you in D.C. or Baton Rouge or somewhere in between?
I just got back into Baton Rouge last night and here for a day and then headed back to D.C.
All right. Well, what do you think about the election results?
Well, I think they were very good. When you look at the alternative and losing the country, I think they were very good.
That's the standard.
It really is.
I mean, as I said
before the election, and I continue to say, this election will not save the country, but it could have destroyed it. Fortunately, we didn't. The American people did not choose to destroy the country. but to keep the sacred flame of liberty burning. But as George Washington said in his inaugural address, this is an experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people. And I think it's going to be very important. Nothing was definitively decided other than we're going to keep this thing alive. And so the American people have to be very much involved in this process. And I'm going to speak specifically to Christians who fortunately did turn out and did vote in this election. But we got to continue to pray. We've got to continue to stand for what is right and what is true. And America, and I'm all about America being great, but America can't be great until it's morally good. We've got to restore the moral foundation to this country. And that's not going to happen through government. It's going to happen through the churches. And we've got to be more vocal going forward.
Tony, it's Fred here. What are you making of the reaction within the Democratic Party? They're a firing squad on each other right now.
Tony's heartbroken.
Yeah, I'm lamenting. Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, I think they misread the American people. I mean, the fact, look, what one of the statistics that I think is most informative is that in 2020, Joe Biden got a higher percentage of women than Kamala Harris got in 2024. Mm-hmm. I think what that says is that more women in America were concerned about feeding their children than aborting them. And I think that's a lesson the Democrats need to learn and the Republicans. Yes, economic issues matter, but there is a moral foundation that this country must maintain. And I think the Democrats have lost that completely. And I think that's what the American people rejected.
All right. Who's Trump going to name to be his? Well, I'm asking a broad question here. What's going to be important now is who Trump gets to surround himself with in terms of cabinet positions, namely, but just working in the administration in general, Tony, because those people are going to set policy.
You're absolutely right. Personnel is policy. And, you know, Scripture speaks very, very clearly to this. When we look at counsel, you know, when we consider who the president is going to surround himself with, I think right now, and I know this is happening, conversations, I've had conversations over the weekend, you know, the president, he made some announcements, more will be forthcoming over the next week. We need to be praying for the president that the Lord would orchestrate such that he would surround himself with godly counsel. You know, in Proverbs 11:4 says, where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. We want godly counselors around the president. And I'll just say this, Tim. I don't think, I think a lot of Christians, conservatives, you know, just see this as a, you know, as a sequel to 2016, that, you know, kind of just a continuation. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think we need to be even more prayerful. I was a little bit concerned when I think it was Friday, or maybe it was Saturday, that it was announced that Mike Pompeo would not be asked to come back into to the second administration. And Mike was probably one of the standouts in the first administration, having served at the CIA, then as Secretary of State, and a solid conservative, but with a biblical worldview, and served the president very loyally. And I'm concerned that we got to have that type of team around the president. And so we need to be praying, especially right now, that that would come to pass.
What about the Senate? Who's going to be the Senate Majority Leader?
You know, that's another interesting question. I do not think it's going to be John Thune. John Thune has, you know, I've been around for a long time. I've never seen him champion one conservative thing. John Cornyn, maybe a little bit more so, but not much. I think Rick Scott would be good. He is certainly a change agent. And he just won his reelection, and he's a successful businessman, innovative, and so I don't know. People are waiting to see what President-elect Trump does if he weighs in on this leadership match. We'll see what happens.
Well, he should.
He should, but I think you also have to realize, and there's probably some smart people around him telling him that that, you know, the Senate we got a majority of, 53, 54 votes as it all shakes out. It doesn't take much to derail your agenda there. So you got to be very careful as you go forward there. So maybe he's
Trump.
He's
Trump.
Well, I know that.
Use the word Trump and careful in the same sentence?
Like I said, there were some wise people around him giving him some counsel that maybe he's listening.
Listen, I'm not Trump's political instincts are superior to 99% of the people out there. So I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying, okay. I guess we'll find out Wednesday because that's the vote, right, in the Senate.
Yeah, I think they're moving forward with it.
So here's what I'd say about that. Now, AFA Action has come out in favor of Rick Scott, the senator from Florida, to be the new Senate Majority Leader to replace Mitch McConnell. But he is not the favorite. The favorite, from what I understand, to be the next Senate Majority Leader would be John Thune from South Dakota, who is next in line. This is the way it works. Almost in every organization in the world, certainly in America, any organization you think of, people, they become, in a church, for example, you become a deacon, then you become chairman of the deacons, then you become whatever, or elders, whatever. So in a garden club, your secretary, then your treasurer, then your VP, and then your president. That's the way it works. Well, that's the same way it works in the United States Senate. There's only... Now there's going to be 53, it won't be that many voting, I don't think, Republican senators. And so I'm just telling you, they vote the way I just described. Whoever's been in the longest, whoever's built up enough friendships, whoever's built up enough IOUs among their colleagues, that's the way the world works. And if that holds true on Wednesday, then John Thune or John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, although they're considered more establishment, they will be, and Rick Scott's considered more conservative or MAGA, if you will. That's how it'll be. If Rick Scott can upend those two, then he will need the support vocally, openly of President Trump, but he needs it today. Tony, it does him no good on Thursday. I'm just saying, if you want Rick Scott, if you're Donald Trump and you want Rick Scott, you need to say that today. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, for what you just laid out there, maybe the reason that Donald Trump is not weighing in, because it is kind of traditional in the way the leadership works. However, I think things may be a little bit different.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine if that's the way President Trump wants to handle it, but don't complain in January and say, hey, we can't have this rhino John Thune in charge of the Senate. Well, I want to go, well, where were you in November when this decision was being made? You see what I'm saying?
You know, I know exactly what you're saying, but having been around a while watching these leadership races, and I've weighed in a couple of times on different, mostly in the House, never in the Senate, but in the House for different ones. It is an insider decision. These are members based on, as you described, relationships and history. And don't always respond well to outside pressure on this. So that just it's a little different as it's approached.
Well, Josh Hawley, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said sometimes I weigh in, sometimes I don't because of the just the internal nature of these decisions.
John Cornyn from Texas received the first public endorsement from Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Josh yet. I actually was reaching out to him to try to understand a little bit more behind that. I'm sure there's some story behind it. I'm not sure what it is, but that I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah. All right. Well, one other question I have, and I don't know. I'm going to let Ed and if they got you got four or five more minutes here.
I do.
Okay. Will Mike Johnson, your friend from Louisiana, will he be the House Majority Leader or House Minority Leader when all the votes are counted here?
Well, he'll be the House Speaker. He'll be the House Speaker. He will be the Speaker.
Okay. And because the Republicans will maintain a majority?
Yeah, they will. There's still some seats out in California being counted. I think there's some concern over some of the irregularities that have occurred just over the weekend. But I do believe the Republicans will have I don't see really a scenario now where they won't have the majority. It's what that margin is if they pick up a seat or two from what they had last time. But I think with the fact that they have expanded, the fact that they've got a 100-day agenda that the President Trump wants to pursue, the fact that the president supports Mike Johnson, I don't see the Republicans not coming together, because I don't think anybody wants to be that one that would throw the House into disarray and keep them from pursuing the agenda of the American people in that first 100 days.
Yeah. Okay, Tony, look forward to hearing you this afternoon on Washington Watch, and thanks for being our guest.
All right, and happy Veterans Day to all our veterans out there.
You included. You served in the United States Marine Corps. How long?
I did 6 years.
6 years. Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
It was a good preparation for politics.
I guess so. All right, thank you. That's Tony Perkins joining us, 6-year Marine veteran. Anyway, thank you, Tony, for your service, and all those, again, we said this at the top of the hour, who have served and are serving in our military. This is your day, and we say thank you. And how long did your dad serve in the Marine Corps?
I think my dad was in for 4 years. He was not old enough to serve in World War II. He joined in 47, served 3 years, and then when the Korean War broke out, he re-enlisted, but only served a year because at that point he was a little bit older, and they basically cashiered out some of those who had signed back up because they had so many more coming in. So it wound up being 4 years rather than six. But I have mentioned this on the air. His outfit did get sent over to Korea, and they were decimated in a nighttime raid. And he very easily could have lost his life in that. A lot of his friends died in that kind of tragic interaction. I want to say it was with Chinese troops coming across. But he served 4 years. That's a long way of answering that.
You mean, so he's stateside, as they say in the military, and he learns that the outfit, is that what you call it?
Well, yeah, that's what he said, my outfit. That's what he used to say.
Went over there without him. Why did he not go?
Well, because he had already been in for 3 years, and they were bringing a lot of new blood into the Marines because of the outbreak of war. That's why he joined up again, was he wanted to, you know, fight for his country. But they kept his outfit was here stateside, and then they were moving some of the older guys out, so he did not go overseas.
I guess what I'm saying, the impact that would have on you for the rest of your life, knowing that your buddies went over and were wiped out, and you could have very easily been with them.
Killed in their sleeping bags, a lot of them. Yeah, that's well. I say sleeping bags. While they were sleeping, I wrote an article about this because I interviewed my dad before he died. I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and I had remembered that story, but he kind of filled in some of the details.
Can you not now? You can't, but can you find that story that
I will
you
try
wrote?
To, yeah,
I'll because try. What I like to do is post it on our Today's Issues Facebook page, and that, so our yeah. listeners can read it, because I think they'd find that very interesting.
I'll see if I can find a link for that.
Okay. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. Well, every so often we like to talk about our American Family Association Foundation and what they do and the services they provide. And joining us in studio is Chelsea Wildman, a daughter-in-law. How you doing, Chelsea?
Doing good. Thank you so much for having me.
Mother to, she birthed three of my grandchildren.
Yes. Three out of the 11.
Three out of the 11. Yeah. So you don't have a majority, but
no.
You have three out of the 11. And I love them all equally, as they say.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about the AFA Foundation. What is it that you guys do?
Yes. So our foundation exists to help donors provide an income for life through our charitable gift annuity. So our charitable gift annuity does exactly what I said, provide income for life. Our donors, they will gift any amount, $2,000 or above, to AFA, and in exchange, they will receive a fixed income. And that income percentage is based on how old they are at the time that they give the gift, and then when they start to receive that income. So obviously, the sooner that you put it in place, and any amount of time that you wait will be a higher percentage for you. And you do get some great tax deductions as well, a partial tax-free income, as well as a partial tax deduction the year that you give the gift.
Okay, so what's the number one attraction for a charitable gift annuity to somebody thinking, well, maybe I want to take this, I don't know, $25,000 that I have and invest it in the stock market, or do I want to do a charitable gift annuity, for example? What's the main attraction for doing a charitable gift annuity through our foundation here at AFA?
Yes, I would say that most folks would say that giving back to AFA and AFR would be the number one reason that they do it, as well as that fixed percentage. That percentage is not going to go up or down with the market, so it's not subject to the market. Yes.
So, but the ultimate benefit for AFA and AFR is, let's say I use that $25,000 figure. Let's say it's $50,000 or $100,000. We have a lot of people who do $100,000.
Yes.
Okay. Let's say you do a $100,000 charitable gift annuity, and then you do that with us here, and then the people who do that, they begin to get a certain amount, as you said, monthly for as long as they live.
Yes.
And then when they pass, whatever's left comes to AFA and AFR. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct. We are the beneficiary. Correct. Yes.
You have to pass. If you don't pass away, then the money doesn't come to American Family Association, American Family Radio. Is that right?
I think that will happen eventually.
Yeah, to all of us? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm teasing a little bit there. But yes, but you do. It works the way I've just described. Okay. If somebody wants to ask you, maybe somebody listening wants to also leave us in their will.
Yes.
That does happen too.
Absolutely. Yes.
You can answer those questions?
Yes, certainly. You can give us a call if you're interested in speaking with one of our foundation team members, 800-326-4543, extension 345. Riley and I would definitely love to speak with you. We do help a lot of folks put AFA into their will as a beneficiary, possibly on an account, things of that sort. And then we do have a lot of people that toward the end of the year, they want to get those year-end deductions in. So their stocks, any stocks that they might not be performing as well as they would hope, they can gift those to AFA either as an outright gift, or you can actually use stock to fund a charitable gift annuity as
well. So they're going to give us stocks they don't want anymore.
Yes. And then we will sell those.
I would like for them to give stocks that they are soaring. You know, that would help us more than stocks they don't want anymore. Okay. So we have a website.
Yes. AFAfoundation.net.
If you want to read about all this and you don't want to, before you talk to somebody on the phone here and you get high pressure, Then y'all do high pressure. Do you practice that?
We don't use that tactic.
You don't use that tactic? I'll teach you about it. But okay. Anyway, so AFA Foundation what?
AFAFoundation.net. Yes.
AFAFoundation.net.
Okay, and we would recommend, since we are speaking about end of year gifts, for anyone who's interested to go ahead and give us a call, shoot us an email, foundation@AFA.net. And to start those gifts sooner rather than later, because a lot of the financial institutions get inundated with these year-end gift requests. So the sooner that you can start thinking about those planned gifts for the end of the year, the better.
AFAfoundation.net.
Yes.
You can read about everything we just talked about, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you.
All right. Ed, are you You know how to put high, you were a pastor. Did you put high pressure on tithing and so forth?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I rarely.
Is that why you stayed in a smaller church? You didn't learn the art of.
Well, I stayed in a smaller church because I was working here full time. So
just kidding.
No, I rarely put that kind of pressure on. I've been in parts of churches. Listen, when I was going to Bible college, I won't name the Bible college, but the president came in, the president of the Bible college came in, and we would have classes during the week, of course, and then on Tuesday nights, we had a required service that we attended, and they'd have special speakers come in. And this one year, I remember our president came in, and she said, and it was well attended, these Tuesday night meetings, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. She said, we have some needs to meet, so we're going to take up an offering. And then she would not let anyone leave till we got what we needed. She took several offerings.
Seriously?
Yes. She said, well, I've just been told we have not met it. So
lock the doors.
So, no, I have never personally done that.
Brad, have you ever been squeezed by a church? Or?
I've heard sermons about giving, you know, that.
Nothing wrong with that, though.
Everything you have in your pocket belongs to God, and he asks for a little bit back. But I've heard stories similar to what Ed just said, though, at some churches, building fund or whatever the case may be, this is our goal. We ain't leaving tonight until we get that.
Yeah.
That's never happened to me, that kind of thing. That's really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? I'm not sure I would stay at that church.
Well, you can't leave.
You're still there, Fred. You're still now there. What do you do?
You have to stay there till they get the amount of money they need.
Huh? Just try to keep me in there.
Well, my dad used to say, the founder of this ministry, if you have to beg for money all the time,
yeah,
just close it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody can get into a need or trouble. Maybe right. Once or twice, but if you're like some of these TV evangelists, remember them back in the 70s and 80s? It was like.
Remember Oral Roberts saying, I saw a 90-foot Jesus, and he said, if you don't give money, we can't pay off this that hospital center.
Yeah.
He's going to take me home.
Not his finest moment.
No.
Right there. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.